You as a church are very blessed to have a police officer to put together such a fine program. You are ahead of us as a church and where we're at. I just personally went through ALICE training, which is a nationally recognized active shooter response training course, and I'll be teaching that to our church and our folks. And so I was taking a lot of notes, very grateful to be present here. So while I may have had the chance to bless you, I've come here and have been blessed myself. So I thank all of you for that. Well, I want to do my next message. If you have that outline, you can turn there. I've got an introduction that I'm going to start with. What would you do if your five-year-old son or daughter came home from school and shared that a boy became a girl today in their classroom? That is exactly what happened in a California school. Without any prior notice to parents, a kindergarten teacher led a kindergarten class through a transition introduction where a little boy transitioned to a little girl. He left the class dressed as a boy, changed out of his boy clothes, and returned dressed up in girl clothes. The teacher then reintroduced the little boy as a girl and affirmed his transition to the children in the class by asking them to call the child her. The teacher also read I Am Jazz, a book depicting the real-life transgender transition from boy to girl of the author Jazz Jennings. Now, this left some of the children in the class upset. Imagine how an event like this might affect your child. What do you say to a five-year-old when they express their concern through tears like this? Mommy, am I going to turn into a boy? Parents were confused as to why the school did not give them advanced warning. Their complaints, though, were met with resistance. Parents were shocked to discover the administration of the district affirmed the teacher's choices. School officials sent out a letter in support of the lesson and the books the teacher used, saying, quote, "Please be assured these books are age-appropriate children's books geared for ages 4 to 8. The letter referenced the school's non-discrimination policy, quote, "that protects all students, including on the basis of gender, gender identity, and gender expression, and we fully support compliance to this policy." A year later, that same kindergarten teacher received the 2018 Heart Vision Teacher of the Year Award. When an educator is awarded Teacher of the Year for holding a transition ceremony in a kindergarten class without parental notice, and school officials defend the action as a support of gender identity rights, you know this issue has now gone mainstream. Transgenderism now affects all of us, and it is important to know how to respond with the rapidly advancing false ideology that our gender is fluid, and its definition has to do with who we believe we are rather than what our birth certificate declares. Now, the saddest part is while parents and school officials are arguing, and I get that, there's a real five-year-old child that is not getting the proper help that they need, who's very confused about their life. Now, last spring, at our group of churches regional assembly, I spoke to an elder from another church from Philadelphia. His six-year-old daughter pointed to a picture on the front cover of a picture book she recently got on a trip with her grandmother to the library. "Is this a boy or a girl?" she asked her father. "Well, that's a girl," he replied. He thought the question odd, given the illustration was of a girl. A few minutes later, reading the book, his daughter asked another question. "Dad, what's transdigger mean?" With that, the dad sprung into action and discovered his daughter was reading the very same book the California teacher shared with her class, "I am jazz." Now, my youngest daughter has just entered into high school. There was no such thing as gender transition ceremonies in preschool classes when she was five. But today, my 16-year-old homeschooled daughter has interacted with several transgender teens. It's important to prepare all of our children to biblically process transgender ideas and relate to their peers struggling with gender identity with compassion. We live in an instant online news culture. Word of a teenage boy, quote, coming to school in a dress and requesting that everyone now refer to him as her and Linda can circulate through an entire student body in minutes. Younger middle school students with far less discernment read Instagram too. They end up telling their five-year-old brother that a high school boy turned into a girl today. As parents, as a result, we need to be aware that it doesn't have to just happen in a five-year-old kindergarten classroom for that information to filter down to our youngest children. Silly bands and fidget spinners were fads. They swept through schools like wildfire and burned themselves out. Gender fluidity is not a fad. The confusion surrounding gender is only going to grow. You see, the promotion of the idea that your gender is fluid, something that you need to decide, has brought confusion to a whole new generation of young people and is going to result in gender insecurity among more and more of our children in the days and years ahead. So it is really important that we prepare our children for this eventuality. Now, there's a biblical prediction here. The scriptures predict the current crisis regarding this and more affirmations of aberrant sexuality in the LGBTQ culture. The world is cursed and broken, we learn from scripture, for the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself would be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Romans 8, 20 and 21. Sin looks to turn truth on its head. We learn that from Isaiah 5, 20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. In today's culture, we could add, who put female for male and male for female. It's what sin does. It confuses and actually completely opposes the truth. Again, in Romans, from the first chapter, verses 22 to 25, we learn that in sin, as God gives men over to sin, things happen. Men exchange, in Romans, the truth of God for a lie. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. They give themselves to idolatry. Therefore, God gave them up to the lusts of their hearts, to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature, rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So we shouldn't be surprised to see this degrading of the culture. And if you look at Scripture, it predicts that things are going to get worse. It's kind of like before the flood, before the destruction of the world the first time. It got really bad to the point where Scripture says men only did evil always continuously. They did what was right in their own eyes in the book of Judges. And we should expect that the world becoming more and more corrupt, we are not going to be able to save the world. That's Jesus' job, and he's one day going to return. We can, though, learn how to interpret and help our children interpret the culture. And that's really what I want to try to help you to do. But we have to take a little bit closer look at the problem. Now, I'd like to read a portion of this book published by the Penguin Group, which is one of the top five publishers in America. It says this, the Jazz says in the book, "My best friends are Samantha and Casey. We always have fun together. We like high heels and princess gowns or cartwheels and trampolines. But I'm not exactly like Samantha and Casey. I have a girl brain but a boy body. This is called transgender. I was born this way." After explaining how it took a doctor to help Jazz's parents see that he was transgender, the story goes on to explain the little boy's parents allowed him to change his name to Jazz. Then it moves on to explain the changes in the school's perspective. At the beginning of the year, they wanted me to use the boys' bathroom and play on the boys' team in gym class, but that didn't feel normal to me at all. I was so happy when the teachers changed their mind. The book concludes with, "I don't mind being different. Different is special. I think what matters most is what a person is like inside. And inside, I'm happy. I'm having fun. I'm proud. I'm Jazz." Penguin describes the age range of their book on Amazon as preschool. That would be age 5 or 4 or maybe even 3 through 3rd grade. Now, today, Jazz Jennings is in high school and has her own reality TV show in its 5th season, which describes the typical challenges a transgender teen and their family deal with. Last year, Jazz wrote, "Being Jazz, My Life as a Transgender Teen." And there's a lie, it's just a complete lie that takes place in every book, largely, that I've read. And that is the reality of your outside in your gender does not govern the reality of the inside of your gender. So who you are on the outside doesn't have to be who you are on the inside. You get to be who you think you are, not who you factually are. Now, what I've done in my book, God Made Boys and Girls, is I've talked about how God gives us our gender as His good gift, and how our gender is coded into every single cell in our body. We've all learned about this in simple biology class. XX for girls and XY for boys. Dad gives one of his genes up for the baby that God's creating. If he gives an X to join with the mom's X, it's a girl. If he gives a Y to join with the mom's X, it's a boy. And that's coded in every single cell in your body, and there's nothing that anybody has ever been able to do to change that. So the idea that you could be a boy on the outside but a girl on the inside is completely and fundamentally wholesale wrong. It's just not true. And yet in our culture, that idea is being presented. And it's going to test, in some cases, our commitment to the truth. When I mentioned the idea of writing a book on gender, my wife Lois warned me that of the repercussions that could come from writing on this topic in this day and age. In fact, if you look at my book, there is no illustrator's name on the book. That's because the illustrator refused to have their name put on the book because of the topic. And I understand, because not everybody wants to be in, as was it Bill put it, the guy, in the zone of fire. That's where you put yourself. Andrew Walker, author of God and the Transgender Debate, says, "The biggest claim of the transgender movement is that a man who thinks he's a woman can really be a woman and vice versa. You see this in many ways, from preferred pronouns, sex reassignment surgeries, and demands to use the restroom of a perceived rather than given gender. The problem is that this is a philosophical claim that is not true and can never be true in any way or form. A man's chromosomes cannot be engineered into female chromosomes. Altering one's appearance cosmetically or surgically cannot change the underlying reality of a person's biological makeup. The psychology of the mind cannot override the facts of a person's biological markers. The transgender revolution demands that we believe falsehoods about human nature, and truth and falsehood have never been a matter of majority vote, because we know that there is a creator who has the authority to decide and state what is right and wrong. So how should we respond as parents? How do we prepare our youngest children for the ideas they are going to hear regarding gender fluidity? I want to give you a few tips. First, teach your children about God's design. The proper response to this idea, this false idea, is to teach your children the truth that God created gender, Genesis 1:27, and determined our gender at conception when he created us in our mother's womb. That's Psalm 139:13. God never makes mistakes, and when he looks at his gender choice for men and women, just like he did after creating Adam and Eve, he declares his choice as very good. Genesis 1:31. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14. You can proactively teach your youngest children that God gave them their gender as his good gift. It's important to begin affirming your children's gender at a young age, saying things like, "I'm so glad God made you a boy. You're going to grow up to be a wonderful young man." Those kind of comments, when your children are young, are really a lot more important today than they were 50 years ago when my mom was talking to me. Secondly, you want to avoid gender stereotypes. Young girls with more masculine characteristics like a deep voice or broad shoulders, or girls who enjoy playing with the boys, should not be belittled. Boys with high voices or those who like to dance with their sisters should not be criticized. God gave us our talents and characteristics. Your daughter may grow up to be an Olympic swimmer, your son to be a Broadway dancer. Both need your affirmation and support, and that's never been more important. Concentrate on your children's relationship with God and encourage them to live for God's glory in all they do. Now, when I was growing up, generally a part of our neighborhood culture was to make fun of the boys who did anything with the girls. But we didn't have the confusion coming in as early as early elementary. To play off of those insecurities and encourage someone to actually go to a psychiatrist or counselor who would then get their parents involved and recommend hormone therapy. That is where we live today. So we want to be careful that we are affirming, because so often at the bottom of these children who are struggling are just genuine, real insecurities. And what is true is children who struggle with gender insecurities, statistics show that the vast high majority of them would just grow out of them, would not be a big deal. They would just realize the truth. But in today's society, they're not being told that their thinking needs to be adjusted for the reality of who they really are. They're being told who you really are is who you think you are in your insecurity. Now, had King David grown up today, he would likely have been poked fun for his small frame, penchant for playing the lyre, and his poetry writing. Yet David became the most celebrated king of Israel, We still sing his songs today. God affirmed David's gender, saying, quote, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart who will do all my will. He didn't criticize David for a perceived lack of masculinity. David may have not known how to wield King Saul's sword, 1 Samuel 17:39, but God was his strength in battle, 1 Samuel 17:37. Now, if some of these issues come up in your school, I want to warn you in advance that you want to be careful and ward against going to war against your school. Rather than try to go to war with your school, a more helpful approach towards school officials is to encourage your child's school administration to keep you informed of gender-related issues and curriculum so that you can be best equipped to educate and care for your children and help them to process what they are learning. You may be allowed to have your child opt out of particular instruction that you feel that you object to if you can find out ahead of time. Be aware that gender-related instruction is not classified as sexual education, but rather it's classified as identity education. So any school district policies that require parental notification for sex ed do not often cover gender-related instruction. And don't expect your school administrators to think logically about these issues. The scientific truth that gender is fixed and coded into every cell of your body is increasingly no longer accepted. The statements within the medical community have reached the absurd. Let me give you an example. Dr. Deanna Adkins, director of the Duke Center for Child and Adolescent Gender Care, states this, quote, it is counter to medical science to use chromosomes, hormones, internal reproductive organs, external genitalia, or secondary sex characteristics to override gender identity for purpose of classifying someone as male or female. I mean, do you get what she's saying? It doesn't matter what your chromosomes say. It doesn't matter what you're like on the inside. And it doesn't matter what you're like on the outside if it disagrees with your gender identity. The body, therefore, must be changed to conform to a person's internal sense of gender rather than the other way around. Unfortunately, it's this faulty thinking that is driving the dialogue in the public school arena. Enter in this other fact that there are high rates of suicide among people who exhibit gender dysphoria. That's the feeling that one's internal identity as male or female is opposite your biological gender. So that medical professionals and counselors are discouraged from questioning a student's gender transition, even if they believe other trauma or abuse is at the center. So you've got counselors, doctors, school administrators who are afraid to question because they could lose their job or their license if they are found to be causing a greater gender dysphoria rather than agreeing with the internal sense of that child's gender. Now, if your school takes on an aggressive posture towards promoting gender fluidity that makes you uncomfortable to send your children there, you just need to know it's okay to explore their options. Christian schools tend to treat this issue biblically, but if private school is too expensive, there may be online education options, or you can homeschool your children. But don't think that homeschool will prevent kids from learning about this. My 16-year-old daughter, as I'm preparing to write the book and write these outlines, I'm asking, so, have I ever heard? And then she starts telling me the different people that she's met. I said, how'd you meet those people? Well, the other pastor's daughter who goes to public school has been reaching out to them to befriend them. And in our school, there's just a number of kids in that confusion who have already celebrated transformations. And I don't know what's happening here, but trust me, this is coming to a school near you. Now, it's really important that we distinguish between the ideas which we should oppose and the people confused by the ideas who need our compassion. Let me give you an illustration. I read a story of a man who was very mentally disaffected by his grandmother. He would go over to his grandmother's house. She always wanted to have a little girl, a little granddaughter. But her daughter had a grandson. She didn't like that he was a boy. She never gave him any compliments except when, at a very, very young age, she dressed him up in a dress and then would praise him and do all kinds of fun things all day long. This went on for years. It warped that little boy's sense of understanding of gender to the point where, in seeking counsel later on in life, he was told the transition was the answer and underwent a surgical transition. Now, we can sometimes become self-righteous. Not knowing the story behind that man's trauma, he walks into your church confused. You might be tempted to treat him like a leper. Unclean! But what I'm here to tell you is, more and more as I'm looking into this, there are broken and hurting people who've been lied to, abused, ripped off, and confused. We need to be careful that we reach out to these people with compassion. Now, his story is glorious. In the end, in the midst of all his confusion, he became a Christian. And God brought him a wife. And he got married. And while they were not able to consummate their marriage as they would have one day earlier, liked to, this woman is in love with this man and he with her, and they now have a ministry to transgender people in confusion. It's just a great story. When Jesus saw the crowds, Matthew tells us he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. That's Matthew 9:36. Jesus knew their sin. He knew the woman at the well lived in sin, but he did not condemn her. He reached out to her with compassion and with love. Similarly, people who are confused about gender are victims so often of a culture that's affirming their confusion rather than helping them see the truth and lending them a helping hand to apply that truth. We've got to be careful that we don't treat those who suffer from gender confusion, who are searching to find peace, like they all hold an agenda to promote transgender ideology to our kids. The vast majority of people struggling with gender identity issues are hurting. They're confused about who they are. We just need to love them. In his book, God and the Transgender Debate, Andrew Walker says, a transgender person ought to feel more loved and safe visiting a Bible-believing church than in any other place in the world. A gender dysphoric person should feel safer speaking about their identity and struggles in church. Church should be the place where people know they are loved, even if they disagree. Walker also stated, while we resist the attempt being made at a cultural and legal level to view gender as a matter of choice, we must also recognize that caught up in all of this are deep people. Those who experience gender dysphoria are not necessarily trying to win a culture war. They need to know that even while we may not agree with them, Christians love them, are there for them, and are ready to listen to them and seek to understand the pain they are facing and deeply desire what is best for them. I just received an email from a colleague of mine who planted a church about a year ago, and he was celebrating two conversions. One of the conversions was of a person who had not undergone reassignment surgery, but who was living as a gender different from their biological gender, who came to his church, was welcomed by the people, heard the gospel, became a believer, was baptized, and is now celebrating their God-given gender as God's good gift. That, folks, is what we would want to have happen if somebody came into our midst. That's what I said about our church, and I believe that's what you would want for your church as well. So it's important that you stay abreast of this and understand the issues. It's important that you affirm your children's gender and you not deal with stereotypes. Those are just really some key basics. And then you've got to really watch what is coming in your home. So, you know the ancient story of the Trojan horse, right? So, the horse is brought as a gift, huge carved horse, enemy soldiers inside. They bring it into Troy. And what happens? In the night, the soldiers come out, they open the gates, the army comes back, defeats. And so I have what I call there are Trojan books. And I talked to you about I Am Jazz. There's nothing on the cover that would have any warning or indication. It doesn't say I Am Jazz, the story of one girl's gender transition or one little boy's gender transition to a girl. It's not on the front cover. George, you open it up. Scholastic Gold features award-winning and beloved novels that range from historical fiction to fantasy, mystery, adventure, and beyond. Oh, look. A timely, touching novel, New York Times. Warm, funny, and inspiring, Kirkus Reviews. A required purchase, School Library Journal. And then you open up the next page. Winner of the Stonewall Book Award. Winner of the Lambda Literary Award. Winner of the E.B. White Honor. Winner of the Children's Choice Book Award for Debut Author of the Year. A Booklist Best Book of the Year. A School Library Journal Best Book of the Year. A Kirkus Reviews Best Book of the Year. New York Public Library Notable Book. A Publisher's Weekly Flying Start. You go, man, that's a great, great book. Well, George is a well-written story about a boy named George who believes that he is a girl and eventually takes the name Melissa. From page one, Alex Gino, the author, who also struggles with gender identity issues, describes George in the story as she. As Michael's reviews suggest, the heartwarming story is filled with all sorts of themes and an unbiblical view of gender. The book describes George taking a bath, describing his genitals. After finding out George believes he's a girl, George's older teenage brother, Scott, asks him if he's going to get gender reassignment surgery. Quote, so, like, do you want to? He made a gesture with two fingers like a pair of scissors. Go all the way? George squeezed her legs together. Maybe someday, she said. This is third grade is what they recommend this for. Melissa, George, that's her new name, his new name. It's really confusing. I don't even know how to say it. Shares that he is a girl with Kelly, a friend. She invites Melissa over to try on girl clothes. Melissa took off her own underwear, stepped into Kelly's, and pulled it up under her skirt. Other than the coolness of the fabric on her skin, she could barely tell she was wearing anything at all. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, what has gotten into the system, folks? And this is winning all kinds of awards. Parents don't expect publishers to use a chapter book designed for children as young as third grade as a means to introduce gender dysphoria, gender transition, hormone therapy, pornography use, and more. George pushes children who may be confused about their gender toward transition rather than counseling. It has an agenda. The book doesn't mention the vast majority of children who struggle with gender identity issues go on to accept their biological gender. Now, I'll give you another example. A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo. This was a review that came on about this book. The lack of a straightforward title or a description of the real message in the book is deceitful. Here's the book, Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo. The plot of this book was explained by my 7-year-old son as, quote, We can be whatever we decide we are, and it's okay for two boy bunnies to get married, unquote. Not the Christmas night conversation I was hoping to have. I understand books can be a wonderful way to address tricky subjects. However, there should be representation of that subject in the title or the synopsis of the book. Honestly, I feel like I was scammed into bringing Bundo's hidden agenda straight into my child's bedroom. But it gets worse. A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo masquerades as a book in this series. Completely different authors. The original Marlon Bundo books are written by Charlotte Pence, the daughter of Vice President Mike Pence, and tell the story of the second family's pet rabbit, Marlon Bundo. The original books teach helpful civics lessons as the reader follows Marlon's life in Washington, D.C. as part of the vice president's family. Parents who think they've purchased another book by the vice president's daughter are shocked when they discover it contains a repudiation of biblical marriage. After spending the day jumping around the vice president's home and office, Marlon and Wesley, the other rabbit he meets, decide to get married so they can hop together forever. When the resident ruler, Stinkbug, discovers the plan, he objects. "You can't get married," he tells them in a scary voice. Then he explains, "Boy bunnies don't marry boy bunnies. Boy bunnies have to marry girl bunnies." But then Stinkbug is voted out of office for not allowing folks to be different. And the wedding proceeds without further objection. Wesley and Marlon have two groom's otters that stand in witness hand in hand. And the ceremony, we are told, is officiated by Pajama, who, quote, brought her wife as a date, unquote. The message of this book is clear. The old stinky idea that marriage is designed to be between one man and one woman has to go. It is okay for a boy to marry a girl or a boy to marry a boy or a girl to marry a girl. Now, folks, it's written to be a parody, but it's marketed to children. And you say, what about the copyright infringements? Yeah. But is the vice president really going to publicly go to war against this publisher? Probably not a good political idea. This is deceptive. How easy would it be for you to, having read these on Amazon, to see this on the list and click, single-click ordering these days, right? You don't even have to go to your credit card. That's what's happening. One of the administrative assistants alerted me to this book. Her son picked this book up in the library. You know, they go to the library, you just pick a book off the shelf, your kids are reading, you're trying to look for good books to bring home, you're trying to scan them as fast as you can. "Look, Mommy, at this book, Prince in the Night." You open it up, it's got a knight and all of these ladies. You think, okay, good. Prince in the Night. Charming Prince was handsome and sincere. His parents knew that soon it would be time he took the throne, but the kingdom was so grand the prince could not rule alone. So he's got to find his partner, right? His bride, you think. Except all the ladies in the kingdom don't really fit the prince. Dragon comes in, and the prince goes out to fight the dragon. While he's there, a knight shows up. Along on horseback came a knight, cloaked in armor that brightly shone. The dragon charged upon our heroes, thinking that it had already won, but the knight had a bold idea and raised his shield to face the sun. The glare hit the shining metal and blinding the dragon's fiery eyes, but it was what the prince did next that really caught it by surprise. He wrapped the cord around the neck and down the body like a thread. So he basically beats the dragon, saves the prince. The knight below jumped on his horse and they began to race. The prince was caught and freed from harm, held in the knight's embrace. "You saved my life and you saved mine," they said to one another. And in a flash to each, it felt like they were simply no other. The knight took off his helmet to reveal his handsome face, and as they gazed into each other's eyes, their hearts began to race. She's like, whoa, okay, let's take this book. And in the end, who is it that gets married? The Prince and the Knight. Thus the title, The Prince and the Knight. So we just need to be careful. We've got to really be careful. Even, let me show you this. Just ideas. We got to make sure that they're biblical. This is called How to Get Married. And I just read the opening page and thought, yeah, this, a marriage that doesn't have any biblical, a book on marriage for children that doesn't have any biblical content in it is not a good idea. You can marry your best friend or your teacher or your pet or your daddy, and sometimes you can marry a flower. You can marry someone who is like you or someone who isn't. Someone who lives near your house or somebody who doesn't. Actually, you can marry anyone you like, except they need to like you back. Is that the standard? Now, this is written by Sally Lloyd-Jones, the author of the Gospel or the Jesus Storybook Bible. So I'm just suggesting we've got to keep biblical content and biblical truth in mind. So you need to be careful. Don't just look at an author. Look at a book. You need to know what is inside. Books communicate words, but somehow when they get written down, we can think it's all truth when we know that truth is words, but so is lies. They're words too. So be careful. So just in conclusion, make sure that you're affirming your children's gender from a young age. Avoid gender stereotypes. Catch yourself when you start to speak or act or think self-righteous towards people who are struggling. Let's be vigilant against bad ideas and have compassion towards sinners caught, ensnared in those bad ideas so that we might get the opportunity to share the gospel. And then let's be vigilant and careful about anything that comes into our home. Thank you.